Cast. Presented by XFL2K.com. With your host, Tron Hawkins.
Welcome to This is the XFL Podcast. I am your host, Tron Hawkins. On this episode, I am going to be talking about the four preseason scrimmages that the XFL had earlier this week. It was a trial run for the broadcast partners as well as the players, as all the week one opponents played each other. Now, some coaches did not like this. I think Kevin Gilbride even said he don't like the fact that they're doing this against their week one opponents, but, you know, they're team players, so here they are. Now, the thing about these games is, one, the scores don't matter, and two, you know, the coaches didn't throw everything they had at the opposing team, giving them tape or anything to look at, but this is a test run for the broadcast partners as well as the teams trying to figure out who they're going to cut. Now, cuts happen today, the 22nd of January. However, the cuts won't come out until Monday, and Monday afternoon, I'm recording my first Power Rankings episode based on those rosters, so it's going to be a good episode. I'm going to go into the rosters. I'm going to count down from 8 to 1 the preseason Power Rankings, and I will do the Power Rankings on each review episode during the season, so I'm pretty excited about that. So let's get into the preseason recaps. First is the DC Defenders against Seattle. They're going to be the opening game come February 8th. I'm using XFL Newsroom and XFL.com's recaps to kind of give you all an idea what happened. First touchdown goes to B.J. Daniels, believe it or not, connecting with Micah Holder, putting the Dragons up 6-0. He actually got the start over Brandon Silvers, which is kind of a surprise. And the Dragons, after the first touchdown, decided to go for a one-point conversion, which was successful. So they went from the two-yard line and got it. The Dragons didn't stop there. Within the same quarter, they gained 3 extra points via a successful field goal from Cole Tracy, who looks like he's going to be an excellent field goal kicker. And the Dragons went up 10-0 at that point. The Defenders don't want to get too far behind, though, came back. They got a field goal to their own, and then Cardale Jones threw a touchdown pass to Jordan Westerkamp. And then going into the second, the Dragons was out for revenge. Unfortunately, Brandon Silvers was intercepted by Tyree Kennell of the Defenders and cast it in with a touchdown. There's been a couple pick sixes in these scrimmage games, so it's kind of interesting to see how good these defenses can be. That wasn't the only interception of the game. In fact, the Dragons came back with one of their own. Nick Temple came in clutch for the Dragons to take control for the team. Ultimately, this went to a touchdown for Jaquan Gardner, who looks like he's going to be a stud for the Dragons. If you're doing fantasy like I am, watch out for him. The Jackin was looking in good shape to take control of the game. The game ended with the Defenders coming from behind to win 21-16. If you're a Dragons fan, though, I won't be too worried. These are just preseason games. The ref said the coaches likely aren't running the best schemes yet, rather doing one last player assessment before they trim down the rosters. So let's look at what XFL.com said about this game. They did a couple of like players that stood out for them. Top performances, B.J. Daniels. It says that he split time with Brandon Silvers, leading the Dragons to gain his first score, rolling to the right. He found Dontez Bird for a touchdown. Bird fell short of the goal line, but rolled over for being touched. Jaquan Gardner, who I just talked about, in a game with a few long runs, he had an electric 35-yard touchdown at the end of the third quarter. It was one of several impressive jaunts by the former Humboldt State star. And Marco Myers, the former Southeastern standout, made his presence felt in multiple ways. Not only did Myers set up for the Dragons with good field position on the long punt return, he also snagged an interception in the overtime session. So they, no matter what score, they practice overtime. I'll get to that in the next game. The St. Louis-Dallas score, I kind of give y'all two scores for. But they did test overtime for all the games, kind of let the broadcast partners get used to it. Again, scores don't matter, but it's kind of cool to have scores. Cardale Jones stood out for the Defenders. He started and played the first half, showing off his strong arm and scramble ability. Jones was perfect through the air on a drive to end the second quarter, culminating in a 19-yard score to Jordan Westerkamp. Tyree Kennell accounted for the scrimmage's long defensive score on about a 45-yard pick six in the third quarter. The Michigan product jumped an hour out, me intended for wide receiver Dontez Bird, and cruised into the end zone. Joe Walker proved to be a big target, using his 6'3" frame to seal Defenders. Made several key catches, including a 4th-and-9 conversion and a deep comeback on a DC drive late in the fourth. That's one thing I wondered, how many teams went for it on 4th down instead of punting, so they didn't have to take that penalty. I know it's scrimmages, but you have to wonder, if the coaches, ran stuff just to try it out. But what's what the coaches said about the scrimmage? That is the interesting part of the XFL profile, is the coach's corner on there. Jim Jones said, now the tough part comes for us. We have to evaluate our group. We have 70 players, and we have to get down to 52. That's going to be a lot of soul searching for our coaches and for me. Once we get that done, we'll head back to Seattle and start our work week. They only got about 2.5 weeks until the season starts. It's going to be interesting. Pep Hamilton said, we have a tough football team right now, but we can't play so reckless that it hurts us. It's one thing to play with great enthusiasm and energy, but it's another to play smart. That's what we learned. That's what I learned about my team today. Here's my thing. You got to wonder how much of this is just scrimmage and how much of this is just the teams. Would I be shocked that if Seattle blows them out come week one? No. Just because the way, you know, the way this game started, it looked like that Seattle was going to run away with it, and here comes D.C. Here's the thing I don't know about these scrimmage scores. How much of this is them coming back because of, like, second and third, fourth string guys coming in just trying to get one last look at them? Like, what's going to happen when it's all first teams playing each other? That's the interesting part to me, is if, you know, is would we have the same result if backups didn't come in the second half? Because I'm sure there are some backups in the second half. So when we see ones against ones, like we've seen for the first half, would Seattle win this game? We're going to find out, you know, we're going to find out in less than 2 weeks. So the next game I'm going to talk about is St. Louis against Dallas. Dallas ended up winning this. If you count overtime, 25-22, but I'm going to tell you the real score in a minute. A lot of people was like, oh my God, they went to overtime. They really didn't. We didn't know at the time that a lot of these games afterwards, they tested the overtime for the broadcast partners. So we was like, oh my God, the scrimmage went to overtime. They all kind of did. But I'm going to tell you the regulation score since that's what really, really counts. So XFL Newsroom had up the recap of the game. Shortly before the game started, we learned that both Defenders and Dragons had alternative logos, leaving St. Louis the odd one out. So the Renegades has like this R, with like a circle, like a Brandon Iron kind of R kind of deal. And as we learned earlier, DC has like a D, like a C in the side of a D. And then Seattle has a Dragon S, which is kind of cool. The game kicked off at 3:30 Central Time at TDECU, which I'll be at in March. Come check out the first ever live This Is the XFL podcast from Houston. It's going to be awesome. March the 7th. Throughout the game, Dallas received the ball, bringing it to the 25-yard line, it says. Scores after the first quarter, ESPN was able to test out a feature they plan on using during the broadcast, their X spot. But presumably, this will be used to feature a player that played exceptionally during the quarter or half a game. Yeah, what it is the interviewer and the player stands on this X, or near it, the X spot, and they interview him, so it's kind of cool. The game continued to be a tough fight between the two teams. The Renegades posted a short clip of Rashard Cleet stopping the run with a massive presence on the field. Yeah, he clocked him pretty good. The Renegades used the momentum that from that stop with their offense. Ferguson burned the St. Louis secondary, looking extra impressive with the catch and putting the Renegades up in the fourth quarter of the game. Yeah, Jazz Ferguson is a name to look out for. Again, if you're playing fantasy or something, this guy from the few clips I've seen was burning St. Louis. Dallas, on the other hand, came back for more. Marquise Young running it in, put the Renegades up by 2 touchdowns. After regaining possession, the Battlehawks were successfully able to march the ball down the field, setting themselves up in the red zone to attempt to pull themselves back into the game. Battlehawks, knowing they needed to respond, tried and came close. Unfortunately, this is not football. It's football, not hand grenades. The Renegades' defense was just too much for the Hawks to get the ball in the end zone. Yeah, Renegades kept shutting down, and I'll probably talk more about this during the power rankings. I know I talked about this on the team preview. St. Louis is going to be a defensive team, I feel like. I don't know if they have enough at quarterback. That's the thing I was worried about on the team preview. You can check it out, Clear to Engage, on YouTube or on this on your podcast feed. Are they going to have enough offense? That's what I was. I mean, they got Christine Michael, but if you know they're going to run it, they're going to stop it. So, as the half was coming to the close, Battlehawks responded with a score of their own. Jordan Tomu made it look easy, tossing it to Cole Hunt. They got the first touchdown for the team. Hunt, not holding back, celebrated by dunking the ball to the uprights. The score at the half was 12-6, so neither team got an extra point. And I noticed a lot of the teams really didn't go. I don't think any of them really went for three. Well, I wonder how much the three-point extra point will really be a thing come the regular season. Is it going to be one of those things where, all right, we're down by 9, we have to go for it? I don't think nobody's going to willingly go for 9 unless they're down by that much. We're down by 18, 27, you know, multiple of 9. The Renegades started off the second half with a response of their own. The team was able to grab 3 extra points via field goal, pushing the lead to 15-6. Using that momentum, the Renegades were able to intercept Heineke, put them in prime chance to score again. Dallas, showing no remorse, came back and did what they've been doing all afternoon, score. Simi Coates showing off with a one-handed catch to put the Renegades up 21-6. Yeah, check out that catch. He, once again, burned them, caught it one-handed. Joined in the fourth quarter, the Renegades held on to a 21-6 lead. That was until the Battlehawks came back to get a touchdown of their own, bringing the game to 21-12 with only one quarter left. It was a tall test to get back in the game. There was no giving up with Coach Hayes and the gang. At this point, the Battlehawks started getting in the swing of things with the Renegades. Back on the field, Matthew Thomas got the pick six to bring them closer to taking the lead. The Hawks now within reach and distance, down by 3, 21-18 with less than 10 minutes left in the game. The game ended with the Renegades up 21-0. The XFL wanted to use their time wisely in both today's matchups. They tested out overtime rules. Renegades was able to pull this one out by a score of 25-22. However, it's 21-18 regulation. So again, the Battlehawks had a pick six. You know, and that it don't worry me in a way, but it does. Like, how good are these defenses, and how good are these quarterbacks really are? You know, that's the thing I have to ask is, how good are these quarterbacks? Now, Dallas, you know, we're doing a pick'em challenge on this week in the XFL with the ref. And I don't know who I'd pick between the Dallas and St. Louis game. The reason why is I don't know how Dallas is going to do without their quarterback. You know, Landry Jones is out for a good bit. Not a good bit, you know, probably a couple more weeks. So it makes you wonder, is St. Louis defense going to show up? I think St. Louis is going to be a defensive team. I think they're going to get a lot of pick sixes against with this defense, basically playing fast inside the dome for 5 games. If I was a picking man right now, and I know you shouldn't go by preseason scores and stuff, but I mean, it's looking. I know Dallas won and they was up, but they got to get better quarterback play and not giving up pick six. Same way with DC. You know, Cardale Jones was known for some interceptions. So, basically, you know, he was a one-year wonder kind of Ohio State. So, it kind of makes you wonder what's going to happen with these quarterbacks once the season starts against these pretty tough defenses that the XFL has actually put together. I know it's going to be an offensive league. The defense had a disadvantage. They're at a disadvantage with the, you know, with the rules. They're at a disadvantage with the headsets and everything. You don't think that pisses them off? Like, you don't think these guys are going to show that this ain't all about defense? There's some low-scoring games in this league. I thought even preseason would have some higher scores, and I thought it would be a lot more scoring. I mean, I know 20 points is nothing to sneeze at, but this might not be as high-scoring as you think it is because these defenses want to show that, hey, we belong on the field too. Let's see what XFL.com had to say about the Renegades and Battlehawks matchup. One of the Battlehawks stand out with Jordan Tambu, one of the 4 signal callers used. He was the first to get St. Louis on the board. The Ole Miss product made plays with his arm and legs on a march that culminated in a short TD pass to Cole Hunt just before halftime. You know, with these scrambling quarterbacks and stuff, I wonder how much they're going to be used. We're going to have a lot of tandem quarterbacks is my thing, like in Houston and maybe even in St. Louis. Ray Laurie III, a quick first step was there for the former Old Dominion star. Oh, he was also a threat coming out of the backfield in the passing game. Again, the switch army now running back is going to be a huge deal in this league. Linebacker Matthew Thomas. Thomas slugged significant snaps and made an impact. He picked off a deflected throw in the fourth and took it back about 50 yards for a touchdown for the Battlehawks. Battlehawks are going to be fantastic on defense. I think they had 1 or 2 pick sixes in this game. Renegades, again, their defense kept them in the game. Watch out for that Battlehawks defense. They're going to be the best one in the league, I think. Quarterback Philip Nelson was one of the standouts. After a sluggish start, Nelson found his rhythm in the 3 touchdown drives and perfectly lofted a 33-yard touchdown pass to Jazz Ferguson in the second quarter, who was the scrimmage's first score. Donald Parham. This guy's a sleeper for you fantasy folks at tight end. The 6'8" Stetson product helped move the change while working the middle of the field, giving Nelson a big target in short hands. And then you had defensive end Jonathan Calvin. The former Mississippi State player spent plenty of time in the backfield pressuring St. Louis quarterbacks. Calvin also intercepted a tip pass early in the third to set up a short field goal. So we'll see what the coaches had to say about it. You know, Dallas, it makes you wonder if they can survive without Landry Jones. I know he had a good game, but when it's week one, can the backups handle it until he gets back? It was good to see Jonathan Hayes said it was good to just get the mechanics of it. It felt really good to see guys execute when things aren't aligned and to see that they will do things the right way. These are the things that we need to find out along with making sure that they can produce and we can trust them. Overall, it was a good night. Bob Stoops said, this is on training camp as a whole. It's been awesome. We've had very few injuries overall other than the big one. We've learned a lot about the league and the timing of the games. Also, the team has come together, so it's been very productive. again, this has been an awesome experience for a lot of these players because some of the players say this is the first time they ever met each other. So they had to gel as a team at mini camp and at training camp. So it's becoming more of a family for all these teams, and we're going to be able to see that on the field the more they gel. You know, it might be a slow start to the season, but the more they gel, the better football is going to be, and we're going to find out who the best team is over that 10-week span. In a minute, we're going to talk about day two of the scrimmages and getting to Houston and L.A. and Tampa and New York. The second day of scrimmages started out when Houston in a home game against L.A. These two teams will play each other in the evening cap on February 8th. It'll be very interesting indeed. This seemed like it was a really good game throughout. Shortly before the scrimmage kicked off, both franchises shared some clips of the teams warming up. The weather is brisk in H-Town, but nothing compared to what the Guardians will be sitting through in a few weeks. And that is true. It's going to be very cold in New York. Very cold here in Georgia right now. The game officially kicked off at 10 a.m. with the Roughnecks opting to kick. In the XFL, there were no coin flips. The home team decides prior to the game if they will kick or receive the ball to start games. Alternatively, if the game goes in overtime, the away team chooses who goes first in the shootout. The Roughnecks broke the scoring odds. Won a field goal to put them up 3 early. Sergio Castillo looked strong and confident as he secured the lead for his team. He kicked a pretty good field goal on that one. The Wildcats didn't fall too far behind, and their game play showed as much. They didn't want to fall too far behind. The team marched back down the field with newly acquired wide receiver Trey McBride, making an impressive reception to put his team up by 3. Coach Moss opted to go for the 2-point conversion, which ultimately was successful, put his team up 8-3. So he's the first one to go for more than a 1-point conversion. Coach June Jones would not take this lead change sitting down. He commanded his team back down the field successfully. They control the game with a touchdown on their own. Phillip Walker tossed one to Sam Mobley, who ran an extra 30 yards to get the score. As expected, Coach Jones attempted a 3-point conversion attempt, but unfortunately the team was unsuccessful. The score is now 9-8. So, you know, June Jones is going to roll the dice. So he's like the first one to go for a 3-point conversion. The Wildcats weren't able to capitalize on their possession, putting the Roughnecks in prime position to add to the lead. Connor Cook was now in control of the offense. So there's that. Connor Cook and Phillip Walker going back and forth. With roughly 6.5 minutes left in the second quarter, Cook connected with Khalil Lewis for a massive 55-yard play, resulting in a touchdown. The Roughnecks now held a commanding 15-8 lead over the Wildcats. The Wildcats were back on the field, but luck wasn't turning out their way just yet. The Roughnecks defense forced a fumble, giving the Roughnecks possession again. They used it to their advantages, ultimately ended up with 3 more points to the scoreboard via a field goal. The Roughnecks held off the Wildcats, keeping the game at 18-8 during the half. So Houston dominated LA to begin with. This is what I was talking about earlier, though. How much is this the first strings and how much of it the backups? LA is going to come back and win the game. They're going to come back strong in the second half, but how much of that's because of backups? Like week one, will Houston blow out L.A. based on the first half? It's possible. The Wildcats started out the half with possession, but things still weren't going to the Wildcat way. They turned it over on downs, giving the Roughnecks the ball at their 33. Fortunately for the Red Wildcats, the Necks couldn't convert. Once the Wildcats took over, they finally got the groove of things. Kermit Whitfield was able to secure the pass and ran it in for a touchdown. Unfortunately, they were unable to convert to 1 conversion. The Roughnecks still led 18-14. In the 2-2 halves, however, the Wildcats wasn't done just yet. After regaining possession of the ball, Saheed Rashad caught a nice pass from Chad Kanoff. We're going to talk about him at the end of the show. They added 6 more points to the scoreboard. Once again, they were unable to convert to 1 conversion, but now they led 20-18. Went to the third. The Roughnecks were once again trailing, something they hadn't done since the first quarter. As the quarter went on, things kept getting going the Wildcat way. The team secured 3 more points from Nick Novak. The Wildcats lead had grown to 5, 23-18, with only 2 minutes left. The Roughnecks were not able to come back, but we'll have another chance February 8th. So they blew a 10-point lead at halftime. They was up 18-8. And then, like I said, the backups came in. They kind of just let it go. So, talking about Chad Kanoff, they actually traded Luis Perez, their anointed appointed quarterback, to the Guardians for him. A lot of people online, and I guess Coach Moss seen it, was like, hey, what the hell are you doing? That's Luis Perez. I've said all along, I don't think Luis Perez was that good of a quarterback. I even said it during our this is the year in the XFL that I think Josh Johnson will be the best quarterback in the league. On that special, I said that. And XFL delivery guy was like, no, Luis Perez. No, Luis Perez wasn't that good in the AAF. I think the Wildcats seen that once they got Josh Johnson. So they traded him, and everybody's like, oh, my God, y'all are dumb. And then Chad Kanoff came back and threw two touchdowns and won them this game. And Coach Moss pretty much said, y'all don't know what the hell y'all talking about. Mic drop, boom. You know, he comes in on like 2 days' notice, and I mean, he's hardly been on the team and throws two touchdowns. So I think LA might have won this trade. Luis Perez might just be a decent backup in the league for New York. We'll see. But yeah, LA's up to something. I wonder about these trades. I said that before. I wonder about these trades being legit. Like, how much is the league going, hey, I know it's a little one-sided, but can you do this for this other team so we make sure we have a good league and can survive more than one season? And, I mean, it's possible. A lot of these receiver trades are weird. Position for position's weird. And we've not got any, you know, we've seen trades, but we ain't got no reason behind it. Like, another coach goes, oh, yeah, the reason we traded him is because blank. We ain't got none of that, so it makes you wonder. So, players stood up for the Wildcats. Jalen McClendon, the starter, was in complete control early, rolling, running, and spreading the ball around the field. McClendon threw a short touchdown to Trey McBride and a two-point conversion to Nelson Spruce. So Josh Johnson did not start this game. They didn't want him to get hurt. Josh Johnson's going to be the starter February 8th at 5 o'clock, trust me. Adonis Jennings, wide receiver, made a number of key receptions for McClendon and backup Chad Kanoff, using his 6'2" frame to create space and down the seams and move the chains. And defensive end Willie Mays, spent much of his day in Houston's backfield collecting tackles and pretty much being disrupted force. Got the defense off the field with a key fourth down sack. For the Roughnecks, both Philip Walker and Connor Cook, they alternated throughout the day, each showing a strong grasp of the offense. Walker tossed a touchdown pass to Sam Mobley, while Cook connected with Khalil Lewis on a picturesque 55-yard touchdown score. In my fantasy league, we're doing team quarterbacks, Houston's team room quarterback. Like, both of them should be taken first overall if you need a quarterback. Defensive end Coney Ealy had the whistle not blown so quickly. Ealy could have broke out his touchdown dance. Missouri product knocked the ball out of McClendon's hand, recovered the fumble, and rumbled into the end zone. But the forced fumble did set up a Houston score. Sergio Castillo, a kicker. made sure the Roughnecks first drive didn't end in vain, drilling a 47-yard field goal to get the home team on the board and added a second field goal. So yeah, I think come February 8th, I think it's going to be probably the best game of the weekend. But I think either team could win. I think this could be a huge game early just because of what's going on in Dallas with the quarterback position. If they lose that game against St. Louis, the winner of this could win the West if Dallas cannot get off to a good start without Andrew Jones. So this is going to be the game to watch week one. That's my game of the week one is Houston and the Wildcats. So the Wildcats coach said, slow start, but we kept our poise and we were challenged. We challenged the guys. We did some good things. All in all, we improved in some areas. That's what Winston Moss said. Gene Jones said, we came out strong, had some good plays, and tried a couple different things. Overall, we're in great shape for week one. There's one game left. I'm going to get to it here in just a minute. It's Tampa Bay and New York. So the main event of the preseason was Tampa and New York, the Vipers against the Guardians. So let's talk about it. The game started off a little slow, but it wasn't long until the Guardians got in the swing of things. They were able to secure a 6-point lead and put the ball in Vipers' court to respond. Tampa Bay, not wanting to fall behind, came right back with a touchdown of their own. So it's 6-6. The Guardians came back strong, though, responding with another touchdown. T.O. Redding secured the pass and read it in, securing 6 points for the team. After an extra point attempt, they were now up 14-6, so they went for two. Still not out of reach of the Vipers by any means. Vipers missed a field goal, so it's 14-6 still. The Guardians came right back and brought the heat, adding 6 more before half, bringing the score to 20-6. New York held a commanding lead going into the half. The Vipers were struggling to find the identity, but we expect to see some adjustments during the half. Yeah, said it all along, I don't like this Vipers team. I don't like the talent that they have. I think they have a couple good players, maybe Aaron Murray, you know, maybe the tight end they have. They picked in the first round. You know, they added some pieces, as y'all know, but I just don't see it with them. Of all the preseason games, I know you can't really take a score into account, but I think the most likely to repeat itself is this game. I think the Guardians could smash the Vipers February 9th. I'm just saying, they could go in and just smash them. And if there was Vipers fans out there, I think they'd be mad at me, but I ain't even heard any Vipers fans. I mean, I don't know any Tampa Bay Vipers fans or even Buccaneers. Now they get mad at me about this, but I'm sorry. When I come out with my power rankings, Vipers is probably going to be last because I don't know what Chessman was doing in the draft. Like, I don't know what he was doing. All these teams seem like they jailed, but the Vipers, I mean, you've heard good stuff about all these camps, about all these teams, but the Vipers just ain't really getting much said about them, and I think they should worry about it. The Vipers had the ball to start the half, and they used it to their advantage. They took it down the field right for 6 points. It was unsuccessful in the next point attempt, but they put them back in the game at 20-12, down by 8. You didn't take long to respond, however. Not wanting to lose the lead, the Guardians used their muscle to take the end zone, adding to the lead. Converted the 1-point attempt. It's 27-12. The game was getting out of reach for the Vipers, but they would not take this sitting down. They moved the ball down the field enough to secure another 3 points, be a 44-yard field goal from Andrew Frank. The New York defense held it on its own, stopping the Vipers from advancing the ball, with the Guardians holding possession again. Things were looking good for the franchise. As expected, the Guardians pulled it out. But yeah, they dominated them. It was 27-15. Not only did the Guardians put up the most points out of the four scrimmages, they had the biggest margin of victory of 12. All the other games was really close, which the league would lock, but the Guardians just smashed the Vipers, and I think that could happen week one. If I was a betting man, I had to pick one game to bet on, it's going to be the Guardians beating Tampa Bay. And who knows? I might eat my words for that in a couple weeks, but I just don't like the Vipers' chances, and I think they may end up being the worst team in the league. I mean, that's just not being mean. I just don't like the team. I just don't like how they're made up. So let's see what XFL.com says about them on their review, like the players that stood out. Peak performances for the Vipers. Linebacker Emmanuel Beal, the former Oklahoma Sooner, played a significant role stuffing the run game by zeroing in on the ball from sideline to sideline. He also thwarted a golden scoring chance for New York with an interception inside the Vipers' 10-yard line. New York could have won 37-12 or 15. I mean, it could have been ugly if it wasn't for that. Wide receiver Daniel Williams, he opened the second half with a pair of special plays. The former Jackson State star made a spectacular catch inside the 5-yard line on Taylor Cornelius' deep ball before connecting shortly after on a fade in the back of the end zone. And then Pharaoh McKevitt, the 6'6", 259-pound starter, a huge target for Aaron Murray and Cornelius while delivering the lumber anytime a defender attempted a tackle. A bunch of tight ends on this team is crazy. Guardians, Matt McGoin. Matt McGoin is a very interesting name in fantasy, especially since you only get one quarterback here in an 8-team league. I'm in a 6-team league, so we're going to have a little bit different. But Matt McGoin's interesting. It was an eventful first half for a former Oakland Raider. McGoin came out firing by testing Tampa Bay deep, throwing 3 touchdowns by halftime. However, some of the sign was muted by 2 picks. But 3 touchdowns, 2 picks, I mean, he's a guy. He might not be in a gunslinger for this team. Kobe Pearson, the fleet-footed BYU product, also used his head on a 76-yard touchdown catch in the first quarter. Pearson chased down the deep ball before losing his foot inside the 30, but realizing he wasn't touched, he popped up and raced into the end zone. And then you have wide receiver T.O. Redding, another constant target for McGloin. The Bowling Green pass catcher had a 36-yard scoring grab and a 1-point conversion in the opening half. Redding also helped the Guardians set up the third score. That's what the coaches said about this game. Mark Trestman said, it's going to be a tough night and tough morning because we have 18 players that we have grown very close to and have worked very hard to make our team better that they have to move on. Kevin Gilbride said there are still a lot of things that need to be cleaned up, but it was nice seeing some big plays, a couple of deep balls that were good. Defensively, I thought we were sharp in the first half. In the second half, we committed too many penalties. It was more on us than them. There's a good bit to take out of these scrimmages. You know, mostly who's going to get cut and who's going to stay. That's the main thing. You can't really look at the scores, but you can look at the talent, especially in the first half of the game, and go, okay, this is going to be a fun league. You know, these coaches know what they're doing. We've got some good coaches. We've got some good players, some good quarterbacks. Week one's going to look totally different from this. But as a test run, not only the players, but the broadcast partners, I think it was awesome. Things also went updates throughout the day. XFL is all inclusive. You know, they let us see some plays. They told us not to really. They kind of didn't tell the score. We had people kind of feeding us the score throughout. We had to kind of piece it together. I know the ref did on XFL Newsroom. We all kind of pieced it together for score and got pictures of the scoreboard and stuff. But I think they're all going to be. I think it's all going to be wonderful week one. My problem is when I do my pick 'em, is this going to affect who I pick? It might. It probably shouldn't, but it might. But we're going to see who the best teams are come week one. Like I said before, the only team I'm worried about is Tampa. I'm worried they're going to be last place. they're going to be the Memphis Maniacs of this league. But we'll see. We'll see what's going to happen. Tampa might surprise me, but I just don't see it with them. The West, I think a lot of people think the West have four really good teams, and then there's just the East. And they might be right. The West is going to be a battle out there. I mean, anybody could win it. I might have changed my pick in the East because the Guardians look really good. We're going to talk about that during the week one preview and on our preview special on XFL Newsroom's YouTube page. Check out XFL Newsroom. Follow me on Twitter and Facebook at XFL Podcast. Most welcome to the team, XFL Fantasy Central. He's part of the newsroom now. The Sea of Dragons podcast is new to us now. We got a couple of different new podcasts coming in. Check out in XFL in Hands. Check me out. I was the first one to join. It's been a wonderful experience for the last almost year. If you're in Houston and a Roughneck fan, come to the tailgate on March 7th, week 5 against Seattle. I will be there live podcasting my first ever live episode, my first ever XFL game. Super excited. First time even going to Houston, going to Texas, going by plane anywhere. It's going to be exciting. I cannot wait to check it out with me and the ref. We'll have a great time. Thank you for listening to this episode. It's going to be amazing. We'll get in there. Next week, my power rankings will be out. And then the next week, week one preview. It is here. It is real. If anything breaks, I'll be here. But it's going to be wonderful to get this going. When the season starts, I'll be doing previews and reviews, two separate episodes during the weeks. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for being a fan. Thank everybody. If you have any questions about the show, inbox me on Facebook or on Twitter at XFL Podcast. If you got anything you want me to answer on air, inbox me, Twitter, and Facebook. Thank you. Have a good night.